from Jeremiah chapter 31, and it's verses 31 to 34. Jeremiah 31, verses 31 to 34. The time is coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with their forefathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke my covenant, though I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. This is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. I will put my laws in their minds and write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. No longer will a man teach his neighbor or a man his brother, saying, know the Lord, because they will all know me, from the least of them to the greatest. For I will forgive their wickedness, and I will remember their sins no more. And then John chapter 12, verses 20 to 33. John chapter 12, verses 20 to 23 reads, now there were some Greeks among those who went up to worship at the feast. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, with a request. Sir, they said, we would like to see Jesus. Philip went to tell Andrew. Andrew and Philip, in turn, told Jesus. Jesus replied, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. And if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant will also be. My Father will honour the one who serves me. Now my heart is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour? No. It was for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Then a voice came from heaven. I have glorified it and will glorify it again. The crowd that was there and heard it said it had thundered. Others said an angel had spoken to them. Jesus said, this voice was for your benefit, not mine. Now is the time for the judgment on this world. Now the prince of this world will be driven out. But I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all men to myself. He said this to show the kind of death he was going to die. I don't know how familiar those passages are to you, or whether you've paid attention, have been following the series that we're in at the moment as we take the readings that are given for Lent. And we don't typically necessarily follow Lent in Baptist churches. We can follow whatever rules we want because we're non-conformist, and so we rebel and don't conform. But sometimes it's good to conform, and it's to be at one with other Christian denominations and to share the same readings, to read the same passages from the Bible and to learn from them. And particularly as we're leading up to Easter in a couple of weeks' time, to just remember some of that journey that took place. I always find it interesting if you ask people, what's your image of Jesus? What the response is. I'm currently studying. When I was studying to become a pastor, we were asked, when someone says the name Jesus, what's the first image that comes into your mind? And we went round the room and we shared. And some people laughed at me for the image that I have, or at least the one that I shared. I'll share it in a minute. I wonder just very quickly, if you just think, the first thing that came into your mind when you hear the name Jesus, what does Jesus look like? How do you imagine Jesus? Perhaps as sung when I was in this particular class. And I'm studying again now, and we were asked to consider this question again. It's obviously something that comes up when you study theology. What does Jesus look like? And some people have an image that's like this. This light shining brightly, Because they think upon perhaps some of the descriptions that are given in Revelation. The shining garments and kind of almost too bright to look at. Perhaps that's how you imagine Jesus. There's nothing wrong with that image. That is how Jesus is described in some scriptures. Perhaps the image you have of Jesus is Jesus on the cross. We have an empty cross because we celebrate that Jesus is alive and no longer on the cross. But for some, it's helpful to remember that Jesus died for us. So it might be that your image, or particularly in that moment leading up to his suffering, when he was being beaten and so on and so forth. As we discussed it recently in the studies that I'm doing, this was the image that I shared. Because when I think of Jesus, I usually end up thinking about the humanity of Jesus. Partly, I think, because our call as Christians is to imitate Christ, to be like him. And I struggle to think I can be like this. That's just way too out there. This isn't something I can strive for or even be. And when I think of Jesus and the stories I read through the Gospels of Jesus' time on earth, the image that I shared, it's not quite what I was looking for, but it's as close as I could get. The image that I have of Jesus is that he's got mud-stained garments rather than kind of shiny, bright and white that have been, you know, through Daz or whatever it might be. But they're muddy because he's messed around with the kids that have come to him and he's played and got a bit dirty that way, or he's knelt down actually to be with somebody who is suffering. He's got mascara stains kind of on his shoulders from giving people hugs and people crying endlessly at him and so on and so forth. And this was the closest I could find. Now this, one of these gentlemen is homeless. One of them is a hairdresser or a barber. I'm not going to tell you which is which. It didn't matter. It was the very fact of that embrace of two people that you can see from them both that there's a warmth. I don't know how clear it is for you, but you can kind of see from their eyes that they're appreciating one another. Neither is better than the other. No, it's not one above the other going, oh, I've done something good. I've given some food to the poor person who's homeless. Good for me. And we look down upon them. No, they're equals. And the image that I have of Jesus is actually that he comes down from heaven. It says in Philippians that he left all the glories of heaven and came down and made himself nothing, being made in the likeness of a man, and then suffered even death upon a cross. And so when I think of Jesus, I think something a bit like this. It's interesting in the passage from John, there's some Greeks who come. Now, the interesting part, I guess, about the fact that it's some Greeks is Jesus was a Jew. He was part of Jewish community and life. And the promises and the covenant that was made, that was talked about in Jeremiah, the first one was with Abraham and so on and so forth. The Israelites, the Jews, that's who the covenant was with. So Jesus was part of that, but there were some outsiders from that group, the Greeks. And they went up to worship at the feast. So they were somehow participating in the worship of God, even though they were outsiders. And they come up and they see Jesus' disciples and say, hey, we've got a request. Can we meet Jesus? And so Andrew and Philip go and tell Jesus. And he says, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Now I imagine that when they first heard those words, because of the expectation of that time, that the Saviour that was being looked for, the hope was that Jesus was going to come and he was going to take back control
Jerusalem was going to be great again. The Israelites were going to be a powerful people once again. And Rome, they'd be kicked out. That's not what happens. And I think sometimes we as Christians have the wrong idea about Jesus and what it is to be glorified. We spend a bit too much time, perhaps, on that distant, wonderful, fabulous glorification of God, where Jesus is at a distance in heaven, almost untouchable. And yet, actually, when Jesus is glorified, it involves becoming lower and lower and lower to the point of death. And we within the church, not necessarily this church, but the wider church, we build people up. There's certain people that we look to and think, they're wonderful. People look to me, and I find it very strange still, because I'm a pastor, and you can call me reverend because I've got a special title now that I rarely use, to say, oh, well, you're closer to God because you went to theological college and you have this post. No. I am no closer to God than any of you. I'm called to a particular role, but we all have the same access to God. I shouldn't be built up or glorified or put on a pedestal any more than anybody else. But we do, because it's in human nature to go, oh, but they're really important. They live in a bigger house and they drive a faster car and they do whatever, and therefore they're really important. And churches do it. Christians do it. I am guilty of it. I suspect each of us is. And we need to remember that actually Jesus came and made himself nothing. It's been very interesting over the last few weeks. It's been extremely challenging over the last few weeks as we have been considering where we're at as a church. There's been one or two difficulties, shall we say. There's various invoices that went out and hadn't been paid. And so things were getting a bit fine. And we were thinking, how much longer can we keep going? It's not all sorted. The good news is, one of those invoices has now been paid, so we have some money in our bank account. But we have a question as a church. You know, who are we? What are we about? What does the future hold? And it's been fascinating how when you're put into that position of going, do we keep going? What's God calling us to now? Because we've got some wonderful resource that we might need to shift and change how we use it, but we really need to listen to God. And one of the options, and it's not the option that anybody wants, would be that actually we close it down and we call it a day. Nobody wants that. But it is an option. There are various other options. We can build and expand and people could come in and we can do fundraising and get grants and hire out bits of the building and we'll keep it going and we'll bring more people in and so on and so forth. Of course, those are options as well. But when presented with the option of what if we have to close, it's fascinating how people respond. Some people have said, not necessarily in public forums, but I've heard it said, actually I've realised how much this community means to me. It's worth fighting for. I trust God. And I trust God enough that maybe I've been in the boat like the disciples were and I need to step out of the boat because I believe God's going to enable us to walk on water. Do you know, well, I don't know if he is or not, but I'm willing to take that step. That's been fascinating. Others have said, actually, I've realised how much other things mean to me. Other things are more important to me than the church. It's been very honest. People have been very honest because actually they've said, I haven't got it in me to fight for this. I've got other things that are more pressing and are of more of a concern to me. And can you imagine being confronted as the disciples and they're expecting when Jesus says, going to glorify. It's time. And I'm going to be glorified. And they're thinking, yes, this is the moment. And Jesus says, it's not going to be quite how you expect. Whoever serves me must follow me. And where I am, my servant must almost be. My Father will honour the one who serves me. Now my heart is troubled, and what shall I say? Can you imagine hearing that? Because they must have been thinking, why is Jesus' heart troubled at this moment? He's just said it's time to be glorified. This is great. And he says, my heart is troubled. And then this voice, when Jesus says, Father, glorify your name. And then this voice comes from heaven. And those who heard it said it was like thunder. So can imagine that it was like, I'm not even going to attempt it, even though I've got a microphone. I have glorified it and will glorify it again. It's already been done. Jesus, because of who Jesus is, has already glorified God's name because of his willingness to lay down his life before he actually gets to the point where he dies. And the crowd speak up and they say, we've heard this and we've heard this. And Jesus is saying, you may have heard it. And what you've heard technically is right. But you've misunderstood because you're still expecting the almighty, powerful, glorious, earthly ruler to come and make Jerusalem great again. And Jesus says, no. Like a seed, it has to fall to the ground. And the seed, when it falls from the tree or from plant, looks like it's dead at that point. I love this time of year. Maybe not today necessarily, you can't see it quite as well because of the snow. But as things are starting to poke up through the ground. But there was a bit a few months ago where everything just looked like it had died. And all the leaves are off the trees and everything's fallen. And you kind of, and on a grey day, you walk around and you think, ugh. And it's not the most delightful image, the falling part. But when you know about the spring, when you know that, and if you're a gardener and you choose to plant a seed, that's a whole different thing. Watching them fall, sometimes not the easiest, but taking a seed that you've chosen, that you've planted in the ground, and the hope that follows as to what might spring forth and what might grow up. Now, you might have better gardening skills than me and know what's going to come up. That's great. However, there's a certain aspect of getting it in just the right environment, placing it in just the right place. Because I've planted things without really reading the packet and hoped for the best and wondered why it only grew a little bit. And it's because I chucked it in the soil that we had and didn't think about it. Plants need all sorts of different things. Water, some need more than others. I've drowned many a plant or dehydrated too many. I've put some in hot places that needed to be in cold places, some in shaded places that needed to be in sunny places, because I think, well, there's a spot. This one on the packet looks pretty. That's where I want it. Doesn't work like that. But there's a hope and an expectation that when a seed is planted, it will grow. And of course, we give thanks now because we've got the wonder of hindsight. We get to look back and go, isn't it great that Jesus died? We, in a few weeks' time, will mark Good Friday. It's the day that Jesus died. But it's good because we know what it represents. But at the time, the disciples weren't thinking, hey, isn't this great? Isn't this a Good Friday? Let's all celebrate. No. They were fearful. Some of them ran away. Some of them hid. It was the opposite of what they wanted and what they had hoped for. The thing is, it's not about what we want. If it was about what we want, I'd have all sorts of things. There's lots of things that I want. It's about moving beyond what I want. It's beyond what you want. It's about what is God's will. Now the good news for our church at this point is we have a bit of money in the bank and we can keep going for a bit longer, which gives us some time to seek God's will and work our way forwards. It's not going to implode and all come crashing down tomorrow. But there's work to be done. The joy is, you see, in Jeremiah, he talks about the old covenant. The old covenant was for the Israelites. And the Israelites broke that covenant. But there's a new covenant. And when we celebrate and share in communion, we celebrate that new covenant, which is for all people that choose to follow Jesus. That Jesus laid down his life so that we might live. And he calls us not to have the laws written down where you need someone to teach, but talks about the laws being in our hearts and our minds. When Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? What's the most important of the laws? He said to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And the second is to love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus laid down his life, not because he wanted to, not because it was what the disciples around him wanted, not because it's what anybody who was looking at it thought, that's going to be a good idea, that's what I want. But because he knew that by following God's will, that seed would fall to the ground and new life would flourish. And we are here today because of that new covenant and because Jesus gave his life that we might live. So when you think about glorifying God, you have an image of God in the first picture because that's helpful. Or whether you have a picture of Jesus upon a cross, or whether you have a picture similar to this one, where Jesus is embracing you and embracing those around you and calling you to say, are you willing to lay down your life, to give yourself, to give your church? I say your church, it's God's church. But sometimes we think of it as ours. We like things in a particular way. Are we willing in all those things to give up doing something, those days out that we like, those particular lunches we enjoy, and the routine that maybe we have in our week, to say, actually, God, how would you use this time? What could I do differently? How could I honour and serve you so that you may be glorified in my life and through my life, so that others may have a relationship with you and know that new covenant?